I'm Judy Swallow in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. America has been a nation of mourning for most of this week, since news first broke of President Reagan's death on Saturday. The collective grief has taken many forms. In Washington, it's pomp, pageantry, and public eulogizing by politicians. Hundreds of thousands joined the ceremony, filing past the coffin or lining the streets as it passed by, followed by the riderless horse, the symbol of a fallen leader. World leaders past and present have flown in, flags nationwide are at half-mast. But amidst the grand spectacle, there are the small gestures, tiny personal tributes, shrines of flowers and jars of jelly beans, the Gipper's favourite candy. The nation has seen nothing like it in more than 40 years. But JFK's state funeral was an occasion of pure tragedy, the consequence of the ultimate crime. Reagan's death at 93 was not unexpected. It's more than a decade since his Alzheimer's took it from public view. A funny, sunny man in life, he might well have wanted a far less solemn send-off. The crowds paying tribute did not know the man, and the mood is less sad than nostalgic. Connection listeners, does communally grieving for a stranger serve a purpose that's greater than grief? What does our collective mourning and whom we choose to mourn say about us as a society? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's begin in Washington, where former President Reagan's funeral will be held today. Alexis Simmendinger is White House correspondent for the National Journal. She joins us now to talk about the mood in the Capitol. Huge question, Alexis. Welcome to the program. But how would you characterize the mood?
You know, it's interesting. In Washington today, it's almost a shutdown, lockdown city for the average person. And of course, all of the major dignitaries in Washington are staying at various hotels. And I noticed this morning that there was a lot of police escorting from the major hotels in Washington to get to the cathedral. So in a way, the city is kind of quiet, unusually somberly quiet. It's a kind of a gloomy, rainy day here. We're going to have rain this afternoon, thunderstorms. And so it has actually the look of a city in mourning as well as that feel of quiet hush.
I talked about the hundreds of thousands, 150,000, I think, who filed past the coffin. Are they there for the pageantry or because they love the man?
You know, I think it's really a combination of a lot of different things. There are obviously a lot of young people in those lines of 90,000 plus people. Those are people who were not, in many cases, around to have noticed anything about the governing style or the personal style of Ronald Reagan. But that there were many people who said that they traveled from long distances. And then there are a lot of individuals in the United States and even some visitors from outside of the country or here in Washington who think that a sense of history is something that is worth seeing, an event that is historic. And Americans love the kind of pageantry that accompanies something as heavily detailed as this. The flyover, for instance, of the F-15s, there were people who applauded that as if it were an air show. And those who waited a long time in line to go see the casket know that that's something that they may not see again in their lifetime.
It is an extraordinary event. Watching it on TV, it seemed to me it was more like a royal occasion, a royal funeral, or even the Jubilee, much almost more British than American in tone.
Well, you have a good sense of what British pageantry can mean. And, of course, in the United States, we don't have anything close to royalty. But in this case, there are a lot of individuals who you noticed were talking this week as if Ronald Reagan was almost a royal figure, someone who had bequeathed to the nation a kind of leadership that it needed. And in death, his death required a certain salute. And when you see the horses line up or the riderless horse, for instance, and the caisson, and the, as I was saying, the very modern advent of adding the 21 F-15s, there is this sense of something very, very important. And for a nation that doesn't have royalty, I guess this is as close as you get.
We have seen politicians from both parties lining up to eulogize about President Reagan. Is it being made into a political occasion or quite the reverse, a time out from politics?
You know, it's a little bit of both, because in Washington you can't avoid it. And when I say a little bit of both, what I mean is that the understory, the backstory, if you will, of talking about President Reagan, the 40th president, in such glowing tributary terms is really to also suggest what it is that the Republican Party meant, what he meant to a party itself. And, of course, there's a lot of anticipation today for President Bush's early morning speech at the cathedral, because the question then in a lot of people's minds, and certainly among the Democratic Party, is can he possibly measure up? Will he look smaller and less significant than Ronald Reagan in comparison? So I think the answer is, in Washington, you can't avoid politics.
Just one last thought, though, Alexis. Is it, even in the Capitol, being made an occasion for ordinary folk? We've heard about people sleeping out all night just to get a glimpse of the casket, personal tributes, jelly bean shrines. Does it feel as if ordinary people are involved here?
I think very much. And why I say that is because the public elements of the tribute, of course, the cathedral elements of it are closed to the public, but the public elements of it and the invitation for anyone, anywhere to come into the Capitol is something that the public does not normally get at, say, a royal event or a average wedding or a celebrity wedding. And the opportunity, the invitation to say what it means to them to contribute some personal statement of their own is something that I think the American public and certainly the fans of Ronald Reagan have really appreciated and taken advantage of.
Alexis Zimendinger, White House correspondent for the National Journal, thanks for joining us. Let me introduce my other two guests this hour now. Robert Thompson is director of the Center for the Study of Popular Television at Syracuse University. He joins us from WAER Studios in Syracuse, New York. Welcome, Robert Thompson. Here in the studio with me, Stephen Prothero, chairman of the Department of Religion at Boston University, also author of Purified by Fire, A History of Cremation in America. He's with me in the studio. Robert Thompson, I'd like to start with you. You're hearing what Alexis was saying there from Washington. Is this a funeral or just a national event, the event that everyone wants to be involved with?
Well, I think it's both. But, of course, it's this enormous civic ritual. And the great thing about grief as civic ritual is we're able to, I think, be naive in a very cynical time, because when the civic ritual is because of a death, supposedly surrounded by grief, we can strip all of the rhetoric of showing American national identity with all its warts. There's license to, in fact, talk in these glowing terms. In fact, it would be inappropriate, it seems to many, to do anything but that. So in a time when we're so used to hearing people arguing, when we are so, I think, rightfully cynical about so many things that are going on in American politics, this has given us this week to sort of naively and happily be less cynical, because, in fact, grief as civic ritual gives us license to do that.
Can we look at cause and effect, though? Is the blanket coverage fueling the interest, or is it responding to it?
Well, I think that's almost like saying, does the rain cause the weather or the weather the rain? They're so completely intertwined that it's impossible to separate them. Clearly, this coverage has been so wall-to-wall. I mean, we've really never seen anything like this, and partially it's because the technologies now make this possible. There are plenty of venues to have it. But obviously, interest for this has grown since Saturday when the death was announced. If we were still in the old three-network oligopolistic period where we had three anchors covering this kind of stuff, no, we wouldn't have had this kind of enormous set of events.
Stephen Prothero, how would you define this morning? Does it have anything to do with grief?
Oh, sure, I think so. I mean, I think one thing that's interesting nowadays is how ordinary Americans feel that they know these celebrity figures, whether they're in politics or whether they're in some other field, you know, like Lady Diana, for example. And because of the media saturation, and because we've seen Ronald Reagan give speeches, and we feel like we know about his life, his marriages, his children, that it's not that inappropriate for us to grieve for him like we would for a family member.
But is the symbolism more important than the... This is not personal grief, is it? It's not like your mother dying.
I think oddly enough, it is in some ways personal grief. I think that there's a lot of Americans who feel like they know these celebrity figures, Reagan included, in some ways better than they know their own mother. They've seen him in many different circumstances. They have grappled with his politics. And it's a strange thing, but I think that people around the world and in the United States feel like they know these celebrity politicians.
Robert Thompson, is what we're seeing a natural consequence of this phenomenon?
Well, I think it is grief, and clearly with the up-close and personal nature of electronic media today, we really do get to see these people intimately. But I think it's a very different kind of grief. People in this country, funerals, wakes, all of the rituals of death, when it's personal, when you're actually having to go to them yourself because you're part of the family, are things in this country that we really feel very uncomfortable about. Here we have a much safer sense of grief. There's something about watching Nancy Reagan weep that touches us and that moves us, and that we want to see this kind of coverage in a way that we would cry at a movie. Certainly, we don't feel the same way when we are weeping for the death of a spouse or a parent. So this separation, this kind of grief writ large, is what makes this stuff consumable by large audiences in a way that, if it had to do with their own personal members of their families, are the kinds of things that we tend to very much shy away from and dread in many cases.
Well, indeed, Stephen Prothero, if you were at a funeral of somebody you knew, you would tend to have a collective experience with the mourners, who are also people that you knew. This is having a communal experience with the entire nation, all of them strangers. Does it serve a particular purpose?
Well, I do think one thing that's being hashed out here is Reagan's place in American civil religion, and that's a term we use to, you know, describe the sort of rites of the state, whether it's singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic or participating in presidential funerals or reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, these sorts of things. And we have in the pantheon now folks like Jefferson and folks like Washington. And I think one of the contests that's going on now with this eulogizing is whether Reagan's going to make it in there, whether he's part of the pantheon, whether he's Saint Ronnie for American culture. And that's certainly something going on here as well as the grieving.
Robert Thompson, we are... Another cause and effect question. Is this a reaction because Reagan was such a great man? Or is this partly as well that the country feels it needs this experience at this time, and therefore Reagan becomes the focus?
Well, I think it's the timing with nostalgia, with memory, with seeing history through rose-colored glasses have all come together. And also other timing. This funeral and this week of mourning comes right in the middle of the civic holiday season that opens with Memorial Day, will be followed by Flag Day this Monday, Independence Day on the 4th of July, right through to Labor Day. So there is this sense, I think, that Reagan becomes... Because his death is not something that put fear into our hearts. He was not a sitting president. There was no fear of disruption upon his death. He's been essentially gone for 10 years from the public eye. It wasn't a surprise that he had died at 93. He doesn't remind us of our own mortality to any great extent. And most importantly, there was plenty of time to plan this whole display that's happening. And I think that's got a lot to do with why it's as big and as organized as it is.
Connection listeners, are you mourning for President Reagan? And does communally grieving for a stranger serve a purpose that's greater than grief? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. On the day of Reagan's state funeral, we're asking, does communally grieving for a stranger serve a purpose that's greater than grief? Are you mourning, Connection listeners? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Phil's joining us from Framingham, Mass. Hi, Phil, your point.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to mention that there have been, over the years, a lot of interesting funerals, which could be divided into celebrity funerals, such as Valentino or Boris Pasternak in Russia with open caskets, or political funerals, Stalin in Russia, Khomeini in Iran, FDR in the United States. And the key to these funerals and the mourning that accompanies them is the necessary step towards reality, where one can step back and assess the person one is mourning, because usually when they're still alive, the objective assessments are lacking.
So special things for special people. Robert Thompson, of the
I actually think the reverse happens. I think while these people are alive, certainly while Ronald Reagan was a president, he was not getting the unilateral acceptance that that he's getting now. I think then you expect journalism to be journalism, history to do what it's supposed to do in assessing these people. What happens in these funereal settings, these grief periods, is I think actually the opposite. We don't take the measure of the man. We don't take a step back and put this all into perspective. This is the period where all of that kind of perspective and objectivity goes on holiday, and we, of course, do what we do when we honor the recently dead. I think it needs to wait a couple of weeks after for people to then begin to collect this stuff all together. If you really want to learn about a human being and everything that they were, going to their funeral is not the best place to learn that.
But Stephen Prothero of the Department of Religion here at BU, isn't that the same as when you bury a member of your family? You'll say, what a great guy he was. He beat me as a child, yeah, but he was a great guy. Same sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's right. And more is at stake with these presidents because this is the beginning of the myth-making. So I think I agree with Robert. I think it's just the exact opposite of the caller, that you have some reality during the people's lives and some journalistic care taken to parsing out what they were good for and what they weren't good for. And this is the point where the figure moves into the area of myth and legend, and we start to say things about them that you know, he was the greatest president ever, or he was the greatest rugged individualist after Teddy Roosevelt, or you know, he single-handedly, you know, brought down the Berlin Wall. And the debate now will ensue about where does this guy fit? You know, is he one of our greatest presidents ever? Is he part of the pantheon?
That's the debate for the future. But Robert Thompson, how do we pick these iconic figures? I mean, the list that Phil gave us there, I think we can probably discount Stalin. I don't think the Russian people or the Soviets had too much of a choice as to whether they honored Stalin. But Valentino in with FDR, although FDR didn't have a state funeral. But how do we choose them?
Well, I think Ronald Reagan was just waiting, a character waiting for this to happen. I mean, for one thing, let's say, for example, we didn't choose Richard Nixon. That was, what, a decade or so ago when he passed, and he certainly did not get placed here because given the history, given what happened and all the rest of it, he was not the candidate for nomination into this pantheon. On the other hand, with JFK, we did. And, you know, it really is important. I think this whole idea that this is the moment when the myth-making begins, we have to understand that is crucial to how we will perceive history. I went back day before yesterday and watched the entire funeral coverage of JFK. And it is strikingly beautiful. It's so well choreographed. It's cinematic. It's almost medieval in its religious iconography. And you can almost see, as that funeral was playing on television, that JFK's mythology was literally coagulating right before our very eyes. That little bit of coverage had an awful lot to do with how we would see JFK in most of the history that would be written and discussed for decades to come. So even though this is ritualistic and it isn't journalism or history, it certainly has an impact on how many people will continue to see these people for a long, long time. And I think that's very important.
But Stephen Prothero, it brings up the question of what is the purpose of a funeral? I mean, Ronnie Reagan might have thought this was all a bit too much, you know, all far too pompous and far too costly for his modest tastes.
Although, I mean, he wasn't so modest in the White House. I mean, he and Nancy Reagan were known for bringing back that Camelot edge to the White House and having big parties and bringing a bit of that Hollywood glitz and glamour. And I think the funeral, which they had a hand in crafting, represents that. I'm not sure he's the simple funeral type like Dwight Eisenhower was, for example, who was buried with a fairly simple funeral.
But let's look at the actual funeral. Do you craft a funeral for the sake of the dead person, for the sake of the mourners, for the sake of the spectacle, as some sort of public statement? I know that you've written lengthily on this.
I think in this case, I mean, a state funeral is for the nation. It's not for the deceased. It's really not for the family. It's for the nation. And we see the state funeral at its apogee, really, in these moments of assassinated presidents with people like Garfield, McKinley, JFK, and Lincoln. And I think that's the classic expression where you have this case where the nation seems to have been disrupted by the death of a person, that maybe something bad's going to happen here. Maybe in the case of the Civil War and Lincoln, the country's going to fall apart. And the funeral steps in and says, no, things are going to be okay. And this pomp and ceremony helps to usher the country from this state of being all right with the president into this liminal in-between phase and then into something else. That's classically what it does. It doesn't have to do as much of that kind of work in the case of a 93-year-old president who's been out of the Oval Office for so long.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Alan's joining us from Virginia Beach. Virginia, Alan, hi, your point.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
62 years old, and of course have lived through some of these funerals, and died in the world Democrat, never kind of saw Ronald Reagan as the great communicator. When he died on Friday, it was, you know, a sadness for the family, but all of a sudden I have found myself completely watching every minute of it, including C-SPAN, having people walk by the catafalque, et cetera.
And why, Ellen? Why?
That's what I've been trying to figure out. And as I was listening to your program and talking about grief, I'm beginning to kind of bring together that for some of us, it is the end of an era. When I contrast the pictures of Reagan laughing, smiling, his cabinet laughing, smiling, the stories, and now the dourness and the closeness of the George W. Bush era, I really believe that that is what I am missing.
You're missing mourning in America.
Yes.
Even though you didn't vote for the guy. It's not personal about Reagan. It was the period.
It is the period. Mourning in America has gone, and it is really a twilight in the American spirit that we really have to fight against.
Ellen,
I'm fighting. I mean, I thought, oh, well. And then from the moment he, you know, left his library and flew, and then all the various things and watching C-SPAN and all the things about him last night, and I'm on my way home from shopping so I can be home at 11 o'clock. And I really do. It's the laughing, the smiling, the way he worked, the European leaders. And I go, we haven't done that, we haven't done that, we haven't done that. And so I really think that it is a mourning of an era and a sense of who we are as Americans. And
Ellen, thanks for that. Robert Thompson of the Center for the Study of Popular Television at Syracuse University. You were talking about how the image is almost stronger than the reality, is out of sync with the reality of Reagan. Is that what public figures do for us, though? We can project our aspirations or our beliefs onto these people that become a symbol, and Reagan was the epitome of that.
Right. Well, of course, that's what a good political leader does. And this is such a most fascinating call. First of all, I love this confession because I'm sure many, many millions of Americans feel the same way.
Well, there were a lot of Republicans in Britain who were eulogizing Diana.
Right, exactly. But what the caller points out is almost she's going into this period of binge Reagan coverage watching, this irresistible urge to continue to watch this stuff as it plays. And I think the way this is all designed definitely makes that work. But secondly, the whole idea of not even here's someone who's not even wasn't the Reagan supporter, didn't necessarily believe in a lot of what he did. But what Reagan, I think, was so good at was his rhetoric was so candid, so frank, or at least seemed so. He seemed to be talking from a place of sincerity. Whether you agreed with him or not, and many disagreed back then, you really got a sense that he was speaking of some national vision that he believed in. I think the level of political rhetoric on the national stage in the past several years has gotten so bad, so lame. I mean, anybody that watched those 2000 presidential debates, both those candidates would have gotten C minuses in a high school debating club. And I think when we go back and see these clips of this guy who was really out there, speaking with this degree of candor, I think even people who didn't like anything he did find that refreshing. Now the best national political rhetoric out there is on a fictional show, The West Wing.
Stephen Prothero, though, to what extent are we seeing a ritual developing, being expressed here? I was thinking about the sort of collective beating of the breast in some cultures, the collective weeping and wailing. Even though there's not real grief, is this just an extension of this? It's nice to join in and be a part of this very public emoting.
Yeah, I'm not sure there isn't real grief, but I think part of what's going on with this caller, to some extent, is this ritual working. I think part
but
of
Ellen
it,
was making the point it's not her personal grief, that there is a sense of loss for a bygone era.
Yeah, in her case, that may be right. But I do think other people are genuinely grieving who never met the man. But I think there's two things here. One is the sense of watching a good film, the sense of being entertained by something that's poignant, you know. And the second is actually having these rituals work for you, watching them and seeing the, you know, the horse without the rider, you know, and feeling something pulled, you know, to deepen your soul, we might say, right? Feeling that sort of religious, spiritual element of the ritual. And I think that is going on for people who didn't necessarily like this person, but can empathize with either his Alzheimer's at the end of his life, which is something that a lot of Americans have dealt with in their own families, or the mourning of his widow, which is a powerful symbol for many of us, not political potentially or at all. And then with some of these broader themes about American optimism that we heard from this caller that isn't necessarily Republican or Democratic.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Rhody is joining us from Smithfield, North Carolina. Hi, Rhody.
Hello.
What would you like to ask?
Well, I'm an active-duty non-commissioned officer stationed at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. I left work at 5:30 last night, drove up to Washington, D.C. I'm currently on I-95 headed south back from Washington, D.C. I got to pay my respects. It was an incredible experience. And I talked to my father about it. My father actually saw President Kennedy when he lied in state. And I just think that historically and from the standpoint of my job in the military, that President Reagan had an incredible impact on my life, and I think that historically it'll be shown that he, regardless of the politics behind it, did wonders for the self-esteem of the United States of America in a time when it was needed post-Vietnam.
That's quite a journey you've made, Rhody, and quite an all-night session. When you saw the casket, what did you feel? Did you feel sadness, or did you just feel proud to be part of history?
I felt extremely proud. I felt of it as a sort of a pilgrimage to show my appreciation. I was surrounded by people who felt the same way. I did not hear the first part of the show, so I don't know what the bullet comment was to lead the show off. But I know that grief has been a large part of it. And I noted that I did not feel grief, so to speak, in the moment. But it was a lot of people, and it wasn't there. But then when I started talking to my father about it, I did. And it puts... I think his accomplishments are, as you were talking, I believe you're talking about something about a C-minus in debating, that it puts his accomplishments in a different perspective compared to the things that are going on today.
Rhody, thanks very much for your call. Stephen Prothero, your comments on that, is this all part of the ritual, the cathartic ritual, that pilgrimage is maybe part of that ritual, that you go out of your way to be part of this great collective feeling?
Yeah, and this is where we see, you know, there's people sitting there alone watching television, but there's also these tens of thousands of people in D.C. or in California who are actively participating and creating a community that we just heard about, you know, standing next to people you don't know and participating in this experience.
And Robert Thompson, we've heard two examples there. The one, Ellen, who was sitting quietly by her TV but taking it all in and not being able to pull herself away. Rhody, who gets in his SUV and drives all the way to D.C. and back again. Is it the same experience?
Oh, I think it's very different. I mean, when you go, there's a big difference between getting in your car and making a pilgrimage to a physical space than making a pilgrimage to your sofa and turning on the television. Not to be glib and to say that watching this on TV isn't done sincerely, but I think the people who are going and filing around the casket in the rotunda and really being there to bear witness is some of the same tendency that visiting the White House, the idea that one doesn't just experience one's representatives, one's leaders through the medium of electricity, but in fact one can go to the place where these people work, go into their house in the case of the White House tour, or in this case actually file by the former president of the United States himself. I think that here there's a real attempt to kind of ritualistically exercise one of the fundamentals of a democratic republic, as opposed to watching it on TV, where that is all being done sort of symbolically.
Stephen Prothero, you want to come in there?
Yeah, I just want to add that I think this moment when Reagan has died in the midst of the war on terror and the war in Iraq is propitious in a way for him, in the sense that this is a time where we need that kind of optimism as a country, and we don't have it. We have a sense of being besieged at home and abroad. And I think that that's part of the reason for this outpouring now, that his message speaks to us at this time.
Robert Thompson, do you see it as it's almost a time out from misery?
I think that's a perfect way to describe it. I think you're both absolutely absolutely right. We need a little Dixon right this very minute, and we're getting it in heavy dosages. And you know, there's other. It's not only a timeout from all these bad images we were seeing in the couple of weeks and months before this happened, but let's also not forget that we were right smack in the middle of the typical 20-year nostalgic cycle for the 80s anyway. Mr. T and Alf advertising things all over television. You can't go into a dentist office or a elevator without hearing old Air Supply songs. Charlie's Angels in its second iteration. VH1 doing two series of I Love the 80s. All of a sudden, the crown prince of that entire decade that we've been so nostalgically consuming has gone. And the timing is, I think, one of the reasons why this has been so huge.
Connection listeners, has Reagan made you mourn for a bygone era? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. Well, on the day of Reagan's state funeral, we're talking this hour about the nature of communal mourning, whether it's for the man or nostalgia for a gentler age. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Niels is joining us from Providence, Rhode Island. Niels, hi, your point.
Hi, I was just calling because listening to this, I think there's a lot of good points in terms of mourning and stuff like that, but I'm really wondering when is the debate actually going to happen? Because I think back about my memories of the Reagan era, and it's certainly not what's really being presented at all now. And I feel like there's this development of him as an iconographic figure in our, I think the one of your speakers called it the civil religion, and I'm worried that I don't think it's going to go past that, and there's just so much more. There's a complete other, much darker side to his presidency that really is getting no play whatsoever, to the point where I feel like, I mean, it really borders on a media failure to really sort of be very thorough in presentation. And, of course, I think that, you know, there's some room where you don't want to be too critical of him just after his death out of respect, but when is it going to go past that? I'm worried that it's not going to.
Well, let's put that point to Robert Thompson, director of the Center for the Study of Popular Television. Robert Thompson, media overkill?
Well, if the criteria we're looking at the coverage over the last week is from the criteria of journalism or history, it is absolutely positively a media failure. This has not been, a balanced, solid historical or journalistic reporting, although we would never have expected that to happen in the week after the death of the president. And we have seen other images of Reagan not that long ago, the Reagan's movie, made-for-TV movie, for example, which was not nearly so clear. With regards to overkill, yeah, there's been some backlash about this. It's kind of business as usual, I guess, between overkill about the celebration of Reagan's life or overkill about Michael Jackson. I don't know. I guess I'd take the Reagan stuff, even such as it is. However, this is not completely a sanctified time. After September 11th, comedy disappeared from television for about a week. Nobody told jokes. This is happening with regards to Reagan. On The Daily Show, Comedy Central, which is kind of America's political comedy of record now, they did 12 straight minutes about this, including the report, or the anchor said, "Oh, is this going to be over now once the funeral is over?" And the reporter said, "Oh, no, they're going to have a special, the buffing of the rotunda floor on Friday. And stay tuned Saturday for our two-hour Reagan, a farewell to courage, or a farewell to coverage, looking back at looking back." So there are some voices out there that are kind of crying uncle and saying enough is enough.
Well, Stephen Prothero, apart from those irreverent voices, is there a set period before people can get more lighthearted, more critical? Is there a set period of reverence? And certainly with Lady Diana, it seemed to last for about 2 years.
Yeah, that's a great question, because in some religious traditions, you do have the set period, right, where you say it's for a year or it's for a week or it's for 2 years. And in the Jewish tradition, for example, you know, the kids of the deceased have certain obligations that last for certain periods. We don't have a set rule. There isn't a rule that when the president dies, it's a week or it's a month or it's a year. And that really has to be determined by the sensibilities of the public and of the media. I think now is not the time to be debating whether the Star Wars proposal was a good proposal or a bad proposal. That right. just isn't gonna happen.
And we've been there, done that anyway.
And we have. And yet that will go forward. And we know there is a natural history of presidencies where presidencies rise and fall in the public's estimation and in the estimation of historians. And presidents go from being in the top third to the bottom third to the middle third. And we'll see that happen with Reagan, but it's not going to happen this week that the debate's going to be going on.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Nia joins us from Hopkinton in Mass. Nia, hi.
Hi. I'm British, and when Princess Diana died, I did not really pay much attention to her life when she was alive, but her death really touched me, and I think it's perhaps doing the same thing for Americans now, whether they followed Reagan's politics or didn't. I think people are experiencing grief, and I see it as being perhaps touching personal grief. You really relive a grief you may have experienced yourself. It's almost an outlet for feelings you may be suppressing. We've all probably lost somebody close to us, and I feel I relive that experience almost through the death of these people.
The death of Diana was extraordinary, wasn't it? Because you talked about how you'd not revered her during her life, and then all of a sudden when she died, you were desperately unhappy, and almost overnight she became a different character in Britain, because she'd been the tabloid divorcee who was the playgirl on the Riviera, and all of a sudden she was the people's princess and she was so revered. Did you understand that?
I didn't. I was amazed at how much grief I actually felt. I actually did meet her. I taught in Germany and she visited the school I was at, and I did not really feel anything for her when she was alive, other than I didn't dislike or like her. But with her death, I really was overwhelmed. I felt I wanted to go down to Washington. I wasn't able to return to the UK. But I was amazed at how it affected me, and I see that happening with people here.
Do you know why? Do you know, I mean, were you upset about the woman herself? Was it that she was a young woman? Was it that she was...
Her life was cut so short. And I think also that's with Kennedy. There's a difference. At least President Reagan did lead a full life, and he was an older person. It's sad, but I think he was at the end of his life, whereas perhaps her life was cut short, as was Kennedy's.
Indeed, Stephen Prothero, Reagan's funeral is very different from Kennedy's and Princess Diana's. I mean, they were tragedies.
That's right, and they were young, and they fit this sort of pop martyr image of the, you know, Jesus died at 33, and, you know, when you die, you know, at or around 33, and you die tragically and unexpectedly, then you can fit in that mold, and it has been somewhat secularized in the West, and we do have a special place in our heart for these people who bring out these symbols of, you know, lost potential, and who bring out our own fears about death and about not accomplishing the sorts of things in our lives that we want to. But I would go back to this point here that I think people do tend to poo-poo the possibility of real powerful grief for people that they don't really know. And I think that's one of the most intriguing things about all this, that I think people in what, since the last 20 years, are able to really have serious grief that's a lot like the grief you have for a family member for these people they never met. And it's a screwed-up situation. It may be a bad thing. But I think it's really clearly happening that we have this sense that we know these people.
Yeah, but Robert Thompson, is this healthy or is it real? I mean, yeah, I was gutted about Jimmy Morrison dying and Jimi Hendrix as well, come to that. But, you know, is it real?
Well, I mean, I think it's really hard to not be grieving for something that these people symbolize for you if you didn't actually, you know, have them as part of your life. But no, I think the point is well taken that sometimes these people become so much part of the fabric of your life, especially since we've had the electronic media, that suddenly when they're gone, you know, I hate to take this with a grain of salt because it's a stupid comparison, but there were some people who I actually really think were seriously bummed out that Friends was going off the air.
Yeah, I was going to ask you this. You know, is it because so many of us live so much of our lives now through television, through the media, that that's more real than our real lives, and therefore when we lose a bit of this electronic world we live in, it's more upsetting than if a family member dies?
Well, and we also say to our real friends, I'm sorry, I can't hang out with you tonight because I've got to watch Friends on TV. So, I mean, who is the closer, who's the more intimate person in your life there?
So what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. If people will grieve over Friends, certainly, you know, grieving over someone, you know, maybe Ronald Reagan was the first person you ever voted for. He was, you know, president while you were in important parts of your lives. Yes, I do think this grief can be very real.
What do you think, Connection listeners? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Matt joins us from Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Matt.
Hi, good morning. I appreciate this discussion. It strikes me, though, a couple of things strike me. I know it's the premise of the show, but there's such discussion on the mourning and the grief. And I think two very critical elements which are at play are sort of being overlooked or only touched about on the periphery. And those are, first of all, national pride. In today's day and age of globalism, national pride sometimes conjures up very negative images and seems to alarm folks. But the reason you have hundreds of thousands of people standing in line in sweltering heat for hours on end has very little to do with grief. If you see the pictures of those folks, they're not mourning, they're not weeping, they're waiting. And I think it is a function of both national pride and additionally, a function of respect.
So national pride and respect. Matt, do stay on the line. I'd like to bring in Amy from Lexington, Mass. Amy, what do you think about this? It's not about grief. It's not about personal grief. It's national pride and it's respect.
I'm stuck. I've been watching all of displays on the television, and I've been listening to people and feeling like I was living on a different planet. I'm looking at all of this and remembering the man who wanted to make ketchup a vegetable on the school menu, and who said homeless people liked being homeless, and he just always seemed like an actor who was being paid to do a job to make people feel good. It's very hard to relate to what's going on.
Matt, thanks for your call. Let's bring in John now from Louisville, Kentucky. John, do you think it's a time for national pride and respect, or do you not get it?
Well, I don't. I think it is a time to pay him his respects, but I personally look upon the 80s as the dark ages because of all the killing of women and children in Nicaragua and the fact that there was a resurgence of a lot of hate groups, such as the Ku Klux Klan at the time. It almost looked as though it were acceptable to be a racist back then, and so I really don't have a fond memory of that period.
Amy, do you agree with John?
So you
don't get this because you didn't like that period?
I mean, I understand that we need to show our respect. Someone has died, a family has lost a member, but I agree with the previous caller.
I was wondering when we were going to get the backlash. Robert Thompson, is it the case that they were talking about the 80s there? There were a lot of evil things in the 80s. Do people always think the good old days were a previous decade when it wasn't really true?
Well, of course, we often look back and completely erase the bad stuff. We had a TV show on about the 50s called Happy Days, when, of course, the 50s were a very dangerous and a spooky time with all kinds of nefarious stuff going on. There was a lot of really bad stuff going on in the 80s, and the start of a lot of stuff that would become bad later happened during the watch of the president. So absolutely, remembering, thinking of the 80s and remembering the A-team really does not take you very far. On the other hand, I think again that's not what this what this week has been all about.
Well, Stephen Prothero, is that the whole point of funerals and rituals and ceremony? That it is a time out from grizzling, that you actually say nice things about people. You have to sometimes, with certain relatives, come up with nice things about them. But is that part of the ritual?
Yeah, I think that is part of the ritual. But although we all have the experience of having been at a funeral where somebody gave a eulogy that injected a fair amount of reality into the story, and those are the ones we tend to remember. So you know, there may be some virtue in having these dissidents here come up and say, hey, this wasn't a good decade and this wasn't a good president.
But the TV isn't doing that, is it, Robert Thompson? We're seeing nostalgia for the 80s, and all the nicest characters and the nicest things that happened in the 80s are all being wheeled out.
That's right. Television so far in the coverage of Reagan's death has been a set of very, very polite relatives that don't want to upset the ceremony. And we should remember, by the way, that this is a production that was 10 years in the making. They had plenty of time to plan this, figure this out. It is interesting. Ronald Reagan started his career as an actor, and this is a very well-produced, carefully planned final act. It's a whopper of a show, but we should remember that none of this was accidental.
And Stephen Prothero, tomorrow or the day after tomorrow, will people still be beating their breasts, or will they be a little embarrassed, or will it all be forgotten? We've gone back to business as usual.
Well, no, I don't know that it'll all be forgotten. I think there's sentiments that are stirred in any good funeral, and this is certainly going to be a good one from all accounts. It already has been. And I think those emotions will be sitting with people as they start to reevaluate this presidency.
Well, Robert Thompson, how many people are actually tired of it already?
Well, if you look at the surveys, a number of people will fill out, are you tired of all this coverage? Yes. And while they're checking the yes box, they're flipping through the dial for more coverage. So a lot of people are responding as such, but I think they're still fascinated.
Robert Thompson, thanks very much indeed. Robert Thompson is director of the Center for the Study of Popular Television at Syracuse University. My other guest today for this hour is Stephen Prothero, chairman of the Department of Religion at Boston University. Earlier, I spoke to Alexis Simmendinger, White House correspondent for the National Journal. The Connection is produced by Anne-Marie Dorning, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Shagatz. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR.